Jai Ma. So as we know, we are starting a new chapter. In the essays on the Gita, this would be chapter part 2 of the book, second series, and this is chapter 8, God in Power of Becoming. So this basically the Vibhuti Yoga. So on the face of it, this chapter looks like, well, Sri Krishna is describing who are his different manifestations. At the same time, it gives an impression that Vibhuti refers to certain exceptional human beings, that, you know, they are Vibhutis of God and they are Vibhutis of the Devi, etc., etc. But this chapter is very deep, much more profound in significance. First, because of the background. Background is that now Sri Krishna has reconciled the different streams. He has reconciled faith, devotion with knowledge and works. He has reconciled that. He has reconciled the mutable and the immutable. And he has reconciled our personality, which is as we experience in ignorance, with the divine personality. So this is something very beautiful. This chapter is about all these, the background is this. And in a way it is easy, let's say, to an average Vedantin, that, well, God is beyond, immutable, he is also in the mutable, he is behind, he is beyond, he is above the beyond, he is transcendent, cosmic, immanent, all this is wonderful. And I can discover him by a process of interiorization or extending my consciousness above, expanding it, etc., etc. So thus far is made clear to Arjun. But Arjun asks a question, and I think this is obviously all the questions are inspired by Sri Krishna himself. Because he had in mind all of us who are going to come. Just like all the questions we see in mother's question answers are inspired by the mother herself, and she has spoken in so many words. So Arjun says that I have begun to take delight in you and your revelation is so wonderful. But how do I understand this world where good and evil, everything is you, everywhere it is you. But in this world we experience good and evil. We experience right and wrong. We experience all kinds of things. Tell me something very tangible. You know, now tangible is like, okay, you go within, you find all that is okay. But is there something even now where you can understand, experience something of the manifestation of the divine? So it's a very, very pragmatic question. And it opens doors to several possibilities. So Sri Krishna says, okay, I am going to reveal to you. He is the one who has made him ask the question. Now the beauty is that the term Vibhuti is not about only human beings who are exceptional human beings. That's how we understand it today. But Vibhuti is about the Mahima of God. If you want to use an English term, it's glory and greatness of God. So God is there as the immutable Brahman above, as the immanent divine who is guiding us and leading us through all our stumbles and falls. He is the transcendent of whom nothing can be said. But what about in manifestation? Is there some hint of his glory? Something which shows that there is a greatness behind all this. So this has a very pragmatic importance in understanding creation. Also, is this glory only about certain things which we can experience, or is this glory somewhere visible, experienceable, or somewhere we can get a hint of it in things which we may regard as evil, dangerous, bad? Is there some hint of it? Because if he is everywhere, there should be some hint of it everywhere. So it's a very interesting chapter. So Sri Krishna starts revealing about the glory. And he also reveals, he used the word mind, but he says that you must understand that in a certain sense, the whole universe is the glory and it speaks of the divine. If we see some of the mother's writings, Prayers and Meditation, Volume 2, there is a writing on the Supreme Discovery where she speaks about that in every element of matter, there is hidden the thought of God. This is Vibhuti Yoga in its ultimate. The mother summarizes it that in every element of creation that is hidden the thought of God. This exactly that there is a greatness of God hidden in the atom. There is a greatness of God in the drift of the stars. And we see that same thing when in Hu Shurbindo says that, you know, in the blue of the sky, in the green of the forest, in the, you know, pattern and bloom of the flowers he is woven, in the luminous net of the stars he is caught, in the laughter of boy, in the blush of a girl. So everywhere there is this glory of God. He brings that out. Basically, it's those first few lines in Hu are indicating, pointing to the same thing. And in fact, Shurbindo elaborates, in the striking of the spears, he is full of compassion and he slays without stint. He slays without stint and is full of compassion. So there is a hint of the same Vibhuti Yoga is described by Sri Krishna. If I may use the word doubled as Sri Aurobindo. This is a term Sri Aurobindo has used, my double Krishna. But in his own unique way, makes it so beautiful, poetic. So Sri Krishna has his own way of describing. So he also starts by something similar. He says, look here Arjun, there are too many to be expounded. There is no limit to it. So he says the same word in the beginning and at the end of the chapter. Nasti. I cannot describe all of them. There are too many. But he says, I'll only give you hints and description. So where does the whole glory start from? And he says, time and space. See, remember those lines in Savitri, the master of existence lurks in us and speaks of, he has called out of the silence his force. And it becomes time and space. So time is the God's glory. What does time do? Time executes the first manifestation. Begins with time. So there is a question people often ask. What is the beginning of time? And somebody was audacious enough to write a book. maybe whether we have read or not. I did read the book because it was fascinating and I realized it's so childish. So now people have discovered, and I must share with you the recent discovery, which is more aligned to what Sri Krishna says, that, you know, time is his glory basically. So earlier it was that time as a beginning, and how they were starting, the beginning is Big Bang, and after the Big Bang the galaxies are drifting. So essentially, by calculating the Hubble's telescope, you discover the galaxies in far distance. And based on the timeline, they should align to the timeline of the Big Bang. That, well, in the beginning, there would be just a little bit of chaotic pattern, then further and further, then ultimately ordered galaxies. So this is very logical. So it was all working very well. Mathematical calculations till now Big Bang. Now God has a, you know, sense of humor. So when it's all confirmed, then suddenly, recently, must have read that, you know, the James Webb telescope has made a new discovery which has totally turned everything topsy-turvy. So what has been discovered at the far end, beyond the far end, because universe is expanding, they have discovered very well-formed galaxies which don't fit the timeline at all. Because if these galaxies were formed so much earlier, then you can't explain by calculating from the Big Bang onwards. So the only way now, the latest theory is that time itself has no beginning. It is without beginning. Creation is without beginning, without end, which is exactly what Vedanta says. Why it is without beginning and without end? Simply because it's the manifestation of the infinite. It is the first manifestation of the infinite. So time is the glory. Time is arranging all things. It's the executing force. That's why it is said everything is controlled by time. Of course, beyond time is the timeless and the eternal. Because time has been given this job description. Look here, these are the things that have to be manifested. In the triple time vision, everything has been seen, arranged. Now it has to manifest. So it will allow through set of circumstances, events, situations to unfold. Imagine, through billions and who knows, trillions of years, you know, the fellow is doing a job. We may say good job or bad job, but he's doing a job. That's wonderful. So he says, time is his glory. Then he says, and space is his glory, his vast body. The stars and the constellations are his glory. The seasons are his glory. And among them he says, well, the moment you have a stratification, then he says this particular season. So first of all, whole creation is his glory. And very easy to understand actually. I mean, anybody with whether one believes in God or not, if you really look at this creation, the amazing way every detail has been worked out, atomic structure, the cells and everything. I was sharing the other day when James Crick, Watson and Crick fame, when they discovered the DNA, the double helix, after 5 years of research. Then he was so excited. His first remark was, when he made the model, he says, it has to be true because it is so beautiful. Based on calculations. He says, but it has to be true. Why? Because it's so beautiful. And he goes out and pronounces that, and people outside were all drinking, enjoying and partying. And he says, you know what? I have discovered this. Eureka. But you have discovered, but look at it, that 4 bases and 20 amino acids have created this entire biological world, from the bacteria to man, and who knows what else in between. So this is something so amazing. So it's a glory of God which is hidden in each atom of existence, as the mother said. See, the word thought of God, basically the supramental real idea. Then they are arranged in space. How the cosmos after birth starts organizing and arranges itself in space. Imagine if any of these things collide, and they are colliding, and a new order is emerging. Moon has emerged out of the collision of an asteroid by Earth with Earth. What a wonderful thing. That somebody threw a stone and out of Earth came out Moon. These are facts, scientific facts. Moon has emerged like that. Then he says, then in each of the things where there is a stratification, for instance, Aditi, Mother Aditi, she has 12 sons. Some would say 7, some would say 12. She says, I am Vishnu among the Adityas. So I am in all of them. But if you ask me, where is my glory actually manifesting in fullness? So he says, I am Vishnu among the Adityas. Which changes the whole perspective, that is he an avatar of Vishnu? Because there Shri Krishna is the ultimate being. But he doesn't only stop. I am Margashirsh, the month of November. Somewhere around 16 November it would start till December end. Among the months. I am spring among the seasons. See how he describes. All the seasons are manifesting him, but I am spring among the seasons. All new life is bursting forth. Then he goes on that among the devas, I am this. But he also says among the Danavs. He is Prahlad, means he is everywhere. Even the titans. And that's why when Arjun is listening to all this, he says, neither gods nor titans can speak of thee. He in fact starts with that the great seers have spoken about your glory. But I want to hear it from you. It's such a touching, beautiful thing. Imagine, you know, somebody sitting next to God. He says, you know, seers speak about you. But can you tell me about yourself? So he has understood that this avatar and my friend is none else but, the divine himself. So he says, okay, I'll tell you because you are dear to me. That he has said in the beginning. We are taking joy. These things are not revealed to a mechanical seeker. I want to find God. I am running away from life. It's too terrible to... When you take delight in the divine, then he reveals. So see, Arjun is taking delight in Krishna and Krishna is taking delight in Arjun. So he's revealing. And he says, among the Nagas, dangerous creatures, he says, I am Ananta. Among the serpents, I am Vasuki. Among the birds, I am Garuda. So all the creation, if you see, he describes at every level that he is there. So there is a hierarchy in creation, which is a double hierarchy. In each species, genus, family, among the trees, I am people. That's how in Indian thought, you know, all this worship. So you have the progressive revelation of God through the hierarchy. So this hierarchy we have forgotten now, but it's important in manifestation. So that's why today somebody was asking, what's your take on non-dualism? I said, this is a very diabolic term used today. It is the truth of Advaita, but twisted on the top spin, like, you know, we used to play top and you spin it below. So you use the word non-dualism to meaning thereby there is no good and evil, there is no right and wrong, so all is same. It's true, but it's true when you transcend that. But in manifestation, you have to understand that the manifestation is progressive. So simultaneously, Sri Krishna very cryptically is saying that though I am present everywhere, in every crypt, but you know, I manifest more in a genus or species. Here you will see my manifestation, which is greater. And then again, arranges it in terms of an evolutionary hierarchy. The whole evolution is there. And it comes to ultimately human beings, to clans. He says, among the warriors, I am Rama. And then he says, among the Vrishnis clan, I am Krishna himself. So he is also a Vibhuti as well as an avatar. Just as people, when they talk about Sri Aurobindo, the human and the divine side, the human side is the Vibhuti. As a Vibhuti, Sri Aurobindo, as a poet, as a journalist, as a freedom fighter, all the educationist, whatnot, he is a Vibhuti doing something very exceptional. But he is also the avatar who has come to open the gates to a new consciousness. So both aspects, same thing we see in the mother. So he says, among the Vrishnis, I am. Among the Pandavas, you know, Arjun, you are a Vibhuti. I am Arjun. He doesn't say you, because now he is in that vast consciousness. He says, among the Pandavas, I am Arjun. And then he says, Arjun is all awestruck. He doesn't know his real. And then he says, wherever you see anything which is exceptional of preeminence, among the Rishis, I am Marichi, I am Ushanas, the poet of the Vedas. So there are several poets, but he places Ushanas as the one who manifests. Among the Rishis, I am Bhrigu. Bhrigu is the one who gave the whole astrological thing till date. People, you know, take it as a standard reference. So he says all these things. He says, I am the, he doesn't stop there. He says, I am the gambling of the gambler. Shri Krishna, it's getting too much. Too much. But look at it this way. Have you seen that when somebody plays a game, and when he wins it with a finish, you get an aha feeling. He's not talking of cunning in the gambling, though he says, I am the intelligence of the cunning. You require intelligence to do. And this is a very interesting story of the mother. When I had read this phrase, later on I connected it with the story of the mother. And there is a story, similar story of Sri Aurobindo. When Sri Aurobindo was playing cards in one of the group settings, he was opposite Leelavati, and there were two others on the two sides. I mean, he was pairing with her. And they were kept winning all the games. So Charu Dutt says, there is something trick you are doing which I can't understand. Sri Aurobindo just smiled. But mother says the trick. So the trick is on the ship when they are going, and you know, she sees a man is being duped of all the money. He loses almost everything. And the mother takes pity. Just imagine. Taking pity on a gambler. And then little bit is left. She says, can I play on your behalf the cards? He says, okay. I am anyways lost. She starts playing. And she keeps winning everything back. So after she wins everything back, she gives it to him. He says, you take it and go. So he says, they couldn't understand. Actually, I could see all their cards. You see. So he goes on to say that I am in everything, everywhere. Among the Gandharvas, I am Chitrarath. So all the gods, goddesses, titans, I am Prahlad. He is a titan, he is a Daitya. So everywhere there is the glory of God to one who is able to see it. This is the essence of this yoga. And what is he preparing him for? Because he is making our mind wide. And it's more difficult to see the glory of the divine here in this creation. This is okay that there is, mind can conceive there is Brahman. And whether you get it or not, you can always say there is this bedrock. Most people who speak about it, well, they believe that there is Brahman behind all this creation, which is okay. Some can actually aspire, some can realize it, experience it, have a glimpse of it. But it's much more difficult to see, experience God here in everything. And if it is true, as Sri Krishna says it's true and gives examples, then it means the divine is not just there working in absentia. He is here. manifesting himself progressively through creation, which changes the whole perspective, which opens doors to transformation. Because, well, if the glory of God is manifesting here, it must manifest in fullness. This was something which I also learned when I had gone to Barcelona. There is that cathedral which is still incomplete. Gaudi. So it's amazing architecture. And amazing. So he has built three doors, the births where all the birth of Jesus and they are displayed. Then other one where, you know, he is. Then there is a crucifixion. There is a door which is incomplete, which is interesting. He died before completing it. So that's the door of glory of the resurrection. It is very interesting because that glory has to come in all its fullness. It's incomplete. Now people are, he couldn't have enough money naturally. It's something amazing. Even as an architect, it's a marvel. So the glory of God in all his fullness, we can say, his transformation. It's revealing itself in the exceptional man, in the man of preeminence. And then again he ends by saying, Naasto asti, I cannot say all of it. Basically saying, now come on, we have a war to fight. So this is the chapter, and we can just read a few passages. Chapter 8 from series 2, God in Power of Becoming. So becoming is that he has become all this. And page is 355. But we'll skip this and come to this part. How Arjun addresses Sri Krishna when he is revealing himself all this. See, this is also wonderful. It shows what state he has entered into. What can the contact of the divine bring to us? So Arjun, this is on page 357. He addresses him. Or page 356, last line, second line from below. He accepts first the avatar, the Godhead in man, who is speaking to him as the Supreme Brahman. Supreme Brahman is speaking as the avatar. So it is, you know, we have already read the earlier chapter, the metaphysical objections, that how can he become this. As the supra-cosmic all and absolute of existence in which the soul can dwell when it rises out of this manifestation and this partial becoming to its source, Param Brahma, Param Dham. So all this he says to Krishna, you are Param Brahma, you are Param Dham, the ultimate refuge, the home of the homeless. In a certain sense, we are all homeless. And where is the home? That's what I my take on the lost tribe of Israel, which is looking for its home. So the home of the homeless. He accepts him as the supreme purity of the ever-free existence. Pavitram Paramam. So though the existence, everywhere it is he, but its purest source, like Ganga. So Ganga is also where it is mixing, meeting the Sagar. And it's very dirty there. But as we were saying last time, it is still Ganga. You don't say that it is something else. But its purest is in the heart of Vishnu from where it has sprung. So that's why we have a very beautiful bhajan also in Hindi. Jin charanan se nikli surasari sankar jata samai. Its origin is from the feet of the Lord. And that's why it is a purifying power. And that purifying power continues even in this. I have seen mother's blessing, very real life experience. Even when portion of it is burnt in a fire, yet having that capacity to, I mean, it's a long story, so I'll not go into it. I have seen this. So even when it is mixed, everything, still it contains something which is there, which we cannot understand, which is as an intangible something. We know recently the Gita survived the whole crash. So these things are there. He accepts him next, after Pavitram Paramam, as the one permanent, the eternal soul, the divine Purusha. Purusham Saswatam Divyam. See, these are names of the Lord given here. So he is the eternal Purusha, in whom all other Purushas ultimately find their origin. Divyam, the divine master, he acclaims in him the original Godhead, adores the unborn. Another place, one of the Upanishads would say, Ajo Nityo Shashvato Yam Purano. The ancient of the ancients, who is unborn and eternal. All these things we'll find in Mother's prayers and meditations and many more addresses. Somebody has made a compilation of all the, I had just spoken in one of the talks, that compilations of all the ways the Mother addresses the Supreme. So somebody caught the idea, made a book and has given to me. I said, you should publish it. This is something very amazing and beautiful. There are so many ways she addresses. So the Gita also, each of them in this book. Adi Devam, Ajam, Vibhum, self-extending master of all existence. He accepts him therefore not only as that wonderful who is beyond expression of any kind. Wonderful is Ashcharyavat Pashyati Kashchidenam. Is that I have no words to speak here. It's so wonderful. So wonderful. For nothing is sufficient to manifest him. Neither the gods nor the titans, O blessed Lord, know thy manifestation. But as the Lord of all existence and the one divine efficient cause of all their becoming, God of the gods, from whom all godheads have sprung, master of the universe, who manifests and governs it from above by the power of his supreme and his universal nature, bhuta bhavana bhuteshu deva deva jagatpate. And lastly, he accepts him as that Vasudev in and around us, who is all things here by virtue of the world pervading vibhutayaha. So this, why in Indian tradition, we grew up recounting many of the names of God. And people often wonder what is there, because you want philosophically to understand. It's enough to say Brahman. No. This has a meaning. The meaning is you understand the divine in all his various aspects, Samagramma. So it got inbuilt in the system. For example, when we would take a bath in the morning with those bucket and what, well, I don't know, nowadays we lost. So there used to be a phrase, Ganga, Che Yamune, Che Kaveri, Che Sindhu, Che. So all the rivers, water may come here. Now we are using dynamized water, no, in Auroville. So we used to take a bath in dynamized water through this sloka. That may all the merits of Ganga, Kaveri, all Yamuna, Saraswati come here and manifest in it. And with that I take a bath. See, such a beautiful thing. That all the rivers are manifestations of a power of the divine becoming. And when you look at this world that way, it changes everything. You know, instead of strife and competition, we can go towards unity. But a unity through a differentiated unity, not a uniformity. It has so many practical implications. Like when Mother says, America represents something, France represents something, India represents something, and all of us must manifest the divinity within the national soul and come together. It's the same truth which he is expressing in the ways relevant to that time. So now Arjun is seized by desire. What is his desire? Holy desire. Last four lines. Cries Arjun, thou alone, O Purushottama, knowest thyself by thyself. Atmana, Atmanam Vetho. This is a knowledge that comes by spiritual identity. And the unaided heart, will, intelligence of the natural man cannot arrive at it by their own motion, and only can get at imperfect mental reflections. This is a secret wisdom which one must hear from the seers who have seen the face of this truth. That's why it is said in all the traditions of yoga, first hear. But hear from whom? Not lecturers, wise scholars who are trying to, you know, analyze. Hear from the seers, those who are the knowers, who have been given this mandate to speak. So first hear, then reflect. then meditate, and then realize. This is the path. And before realizing, let it settle into the very bones, flow into it. Vasudevam Sarvamiti should become such a like a mantra resounding till one day the whole universe explodes, revealing Vasudeva from every side. That's how Sri Aurobindo realized in the jail. So this wonderful truth. So now Arjun is on the verge of this. This is a secret wisdom. Have heard its word and have become one with it in self and spirit. Who are the seers who can speak about it? Who have either seen the face of truth or have heard its word, who are inspired. And this truth has been revealed to them and they can speak about it. All the rishis say this of thee, and the divine seer Narad, Asit, Deval, Vyas, all of them. Or else one must receive it from within by revelation and inspiration from the inner Godhead who lifts in us the blazing lamp of knowledge. So another way that this knowledge can reveal itself is by the inner illumination, revelation, by meditating upon these truths. And then he says, and thou thyself sayest it to me. Just imagine, he is so excited, amazed, wondering. Once revealed, it has to be accepted. So it's not enough just to reveal it. It has to be accepted by the mind, the consent of the will, and the heart's delight and submission, the three elements of the complete mental faith, Shraddha. Then only we can realize it. Just hearing is not enough. That's why Sri Krishna says in the Gita, don't speak about it to anyone and everyone. He himself says. Because it's something so sacred. So it has to be received. Then after accepting, you have to work towards, the will has to accept it. The heart has to accept it. And then one realizes it. Simply churning in the mind doesn't really help. So, Arjun has accepted it. He says, all this thou sayest my mind holds for the truth. See, this is a practice which people like Meera and Prahlad have done to the utmost. It is said that when Meera is so intoxicated with Krishna that her husband sends her a cup of poison that, see, you are spoiling my name and the clan's name and everything. But he sends it by deceit. Somebody through him, that tell her that I have sent to drink it. And that man discloses it, that look here, you know, basically, queen, this is poison. She looks at it, says it is Krishna, and drinks it. And as the story goes, I have been to the temple where she fuses with the idol of Krishna. Prahlad, he is thrown from the cliff. Beautiful description of the Godhead. Snake is sent to bite him. And everything changes. It's why? Because it's a power. It empowers us. When imagine you are faced with what the outer senses are recognizing as a deadly creature, terrorist. These are things which you can actually experience. I've shared it sometimes with my own little experience. And that moment, if you can say, but this is the divine, something will happen. Which can only be said magic. Because he is there everywhere, in any mask. And if we have practiced this in every manifestation, we can compel people to change if we have faith in this teaching. But we don't have faith enough, that's the part. And so, Arjuna has accepted it. Now, a few lines below, next passage. But the difficulty is to see him in the apparent truths of existence, to detect him in this fact of nature and in these disguising phenomena of the world's becoming. For here all is opposed to the sublimity of this unifying conception. How can we consent to see the divine as man and animal, being and inanimate object, in the noble and the low, the sweet and the terrible, the good and the evil? So once someone had asked me, is it really true that Hindus believe that cow is God? I said, not only cow. Update your conception. We see God in everything, even in a stone. In the goat also, in the pig also. But in the animals, cow is the special manifestation among these. Why? Because she is like that, so gentle, kind, affectionate. Look into the eyes of the cow, go and hug her. See how you'll feel. She gives plenty of milk, closest to mother's milk. Even a cow dung and urine, everything can be used. So she is Kamadhenu. That's what Sri Krishna says. He says, I am Dhenu. Why he uses the word Kamadhenu or Kamadhuk? That among the cows, I am Kamadhenu. I am the giver of the plenty. So that's how. It's not that other animals don't have. They also have the divine. So this is the logic which operates in the software, though it has just been transmitted outwardly. So he says that I want to detect everywhere. How can we consent to see in animals, inanimate objects, in the noble and the low, the sweet and the terrible, the good and the evil? If assenting to some idea of God extended in the things of the cosmos, we see him in ideal light of knowledge and greatness of power and charm of beauty and beneficence of love and ample largeness of spirit. How shall we avoid the breaking of the unity by their opposites, which is actual fact clinging to these high things and envelop them and obstruct? Now this is described in great detail in the Mother and Aurobindo's teachings about why these opposites are there, but we'll not get into that because that's about the entire yoga psychology. Mother has taken this to entirely another level, and the whole yoga of transformation comes from this, that within everything there is the divine presence and there is also the opposite, and yet the divine is there hiding. Now the moment you activate that, the shadow can be transformed by that growing light within. So, but that's so ordinarily, a few lines below, to all the differentiations of the world existence, the sage, looking everywhere for the supreme purity and oneness, returns the austere cry, not this, not this, neti neti. So that's how people discard the world. Because it says, okay, divine in purity, all this is fine, sublimity, but what is this? So, but Arjun has accepted the revelation of Vasudeva as all. This is the difference. The difference is that his mind has accepted that if you are saying Krishna, I accept it. See, it requires a tremendous courage and faith. So when people say, oh, transformation, discussion, this, that, I say, see, there is a short answer and long answer. Long answer I'll tell later, that the logic and magic and pakka transformation is going to be. The shortest answer is because Sri Aurobindo says so. I have faith in Sri Aurobindo. Simple. Because Sri Aurobindo says so. If I don't have faith in Sri Aurobindo, what am I doing? As simple as that. So that's the logic. So if I have faith in Sri Aurobindo, and of course, logically you can explain the whole tapasya, sadhana they've done, and all the logic of transformation from without even involving God, simply the fact of evolution. But the point is that, you know, how we can be like Arjun if we have to be revealed the truth of the Gita within us. He says, Arjun has accepted. Sri Krishna, I'm not arguing with you now. You just speak. Speak of your glory. So he continues. So what does he see? He gives it complete and detailed. Because Arjun says something very interesting. He says, thou shouldst tell me, he says, see what a friend, all thy divine self manifestations in thy sovereign power of becoming. Nothing omitted. He says, don't omit anything. Tell me everything. So he starts. And he starts by saying, nasti anto vistarasya me. There is no end to my extensions. So he says, the divine teacher accedes to the request of the disciple, but with an initial reminder that a full reply is not possible. Why it's not possible? For God is infinite and his manifestation is infinite. That's why the mother summarized it. In each atom there dwells a thought of God. And everywhere and in everything. This Sri Aurobindo has given this as a basic practice actually. If you read yoga and its objects, it starts by practice. People often say, what kind of meditation we have? This is the practice. Let the mind accept this idea like we accept, the fact of the physical universe. And then let the mind keep on reflecting upon it, meditating upon it till, and let the heart catch it. Every contact should bring that sense within, and let the will catch it. that wherever, in whatever way I am serving God, not like 6 hours in ashram duty, I am serving divine. After that, my own joy of life, I am free to do whatever I want. In every relationship, in every interaction, with every human being, with every animal creature, there is the divine who is within. This is the yoga which is being revealed to us through all this. We had Naga Panchami recently, no? So you worship even Naga, though from a distance you put milk and take. Basically it's saying, look here, we have kept, don't come inside the house. But look at it like, you know, you don't rush to kill. You pray, God is there also. Vasuki. So then he says that, well, on page 361, becoming in all its extension, its good and evil, perfection and imperfection, light and darkness, we must at the same time realize that there is an ascending evolutionary power in it, an increasing intensity of its revelation in things, a hierarchic secret, something that carries its upward from the first concealing appearances through higher and higher forms toward the large ideal nature of the universal Godhead. So this hierarchy is revealed. In each genus species there is a hierarchy. In the whole evolutionary ladder there is a hierarchy. And it is not going to end, because even at the end Sri Krishna says, I can't tell you everything. It doesn't end. Meaning thereby the work goes on. So we are all work in progress. When somebody wants to, you know, come, so show me some realized people. Well, there are, and it is still a work in progress. So everywhere we should put yellow line. Work in progress. Then people have right expectations. Otherwise they... So, this summary enumeration begins with a statement of the primal principle that underlines all the power of this manifestation in the universe. It is this, that in every being and object God dwells concealed and discoverable. And he starts with few lines below. Time and space, that are the conceptual movement and extension of the Godhead in us. All is this self-seeing soul, this self-representing spirit. Now, time and space, there is a very beautiful description given here. So I shall just see that. So, time is about endless. So, where is God in time? Endless. So, the aspect of the divine, which there is no beginning and no end. So, on the next page he reveals, I'll come to reading this part. He is the 362. He is the unborn, 5 lines from above, and the all-pervading master of his own innumerable becomings in the universe, Ajo Vibhu. So he's unborn, but he's manifesting through everything. All things are his powers and effectuations in his self-nature, Vibhutis. He's manifesting through everything, including the babble of a child. So if a child says something, don't ignore it. Maybe this is what I need to hear. God has used the child to tell me something. If I am alert and vigilant, maybe I'll hear God speak through the babble of a child. So this is what it means, that everywhere, be attentive. You don't know from where God will speak. He is the origin of all they are. Their beginning, he is their support in their ever-changing status, their middle. He is their end to the culmination of the disintegration of each created thing in its cessation of its disappearance. So, you see this again, when we condemn creation, or when we condemn anyone, we are in a way condemning God. You know, when we say, oh, this painting is so horrible, and the painter is standing nearby, you say, wait, I have not finished this, Baba. You are prematurely seeing. Wait, I'll give you my vision, then you see it. So when we condemn anyone and we condemn the creation as suffering this, that, basically, knowingly, unknowingly, we are condemning the creator. Unless we say creator has nothing to do with it, then Miss Maya walked in from some door and Mr. Time walked in and together they created this mess. Then it's different. That is the way people have tried to solve it. Okay. Now the next passage, it starts from there, page 362. God is imperishable, beginningless, unending time. That's how he manifests in time. As I was saying, very recent discoveries, maybe a few weeks, this idea of time has come closer to what the Gita reveals. That time doesn't have a beginning. Time is endless. Creation doesn't have a beginning and an end. It is cyclic. That's exactly what today, even in physics, we are coming to it. Because it's progressive manifestation. It's not a meaningless cycle. So that's another thing. Oh, it's cyclic means same spot. No, no. Just like in cycle, we move forward, it's moving forward. So six pralayas are not going back to the same point. It's moving forward. Today's seventh creation, it will escape from a critical, like anything. Critical velocity. You escape the gravity. So that's how it is. So you see, Aham eva akshaya kalaha. I am unending time. Akshaya. So that's how he describes. In that movement of time and becoming, God appears to our conception or experience of him by the evidence of his works as the divine power who ordains and sets all things in their place in the movement. That's the job of time. He brings certain things now. He will take them away. There is nothing which is going to be permanently at one place. If somebody believes it, one is not read the Gita. That's all I can say. And making a fool of oneself. Ravan came, went. Kans came, went. Hitler came, went. And many have come now who are believing. Who will go? But what will remain? God and his manifestation. Because that is endless. So that's what he is revealing. It brings humility, no? Because he alone is manifesting. In his form of space, it is he who fronts us. Look at this phrase, this is so lovely. I mean, time and space in the life divine Shurbindo describes so beautifully. Brahman extends himself as space and Brahman in mobility becomes time. But look how he is describing. This is something so wonderful. How does he manifest his space? In his form of space, it is he who fronts us in every direction. Million-bodied, myriad-minded, manifest in each existence. We see his faces on all sides of us. Dhataham vishvato mukham. I see reading is very fine. It means whichever way you go, you will meet God. This whole universe is expanding in the embrace of God, if you want to put it. People often ask, where is space expanding into? In the arms of God. That's what it is. Oh no, void absolute. Red lips that kiss and blow the flute. Time is he and space also. Space is extending into whom? In the divine consciousness. He has become space. So whichever direction you move, that's something very nice about Auroville. You get lost and you don't know where to go. And then you say, lead me, oh kindly light. Anyways, you will go somewhere. Only if you have an appointment, you will miss because phones don't work. Many places. But it's also a joy. It's a charm and an adventure. It's okay. I mean, it's happened to me a couple of times. When nobody is there to tell us. Nobody is home to ask. So you are going one community, you don't know which way, but God will be there. Don't worry. Some way he'll come, appear. My first encounter coming to Pondicherry was, I landed in Auroville, not in ashram. And I thought it is ashram. I didn't know the difference. So the auto rickshaw comes, I get down from the bus, myself and Kavita, and he says, Matri Mandir. He says, Auroville. And I thought, Auroville, okay, sounds familiar. Ashram, Auroville, Auro, Shurbindo. I said, yes. Very confidently. And he says, Matri Mandir. I said, yes, there must be a mandir dedicated to Divine Mother. So, okay. He drops me somewhere in the middle, us, and with a little baggage, and where is the mandir? I don't see any mandir. And then I see some French person come running and he says, yes. First time? He said, yes. So he took us to Central Guest House, breakfast. Now you see, the divine is there. No, he will guide you. He will help you. And it was a great help. Because that was a time out, fresh out of agnosticism. I say, I don't believe in all this worship and all. And I was so happy. that there is not even a samadhi of Sri Aurobindo and the mother. This is the place. And then I realized what an idiot I was. But you have to, when you commit an error and realize it, it's something very different. What I missed, when people told me, I thought I missed nothing. They are saying samadhi, it's okay. And then God is within. Then all these ideas, no, Sri Aurobindo is not asking us to worship him. All this, that after 6 months, I landed up to ashram. Just, okay, let me see what is there, everybody is saying. I said, my God, what an idiot, stupid fellow. What I missed, then you know the difference between the two. Are the two sides of the same reality. So he is the universal spirit of destruction. I am all snatching death. Again, how comforting. Somebody died? No. He went to the Lord. Is it a cause for lamenting and grieving? End of the story. Because he is the all-destroying time. But he is also the birth and life. That also he says, I am all snatching death. Aham mrityu sarvaha. And yet his power of becoming does not cease from its workings. For the force of rebirth and new creation ever keeps pace with the force of death and destruction. And I am to the birth of all that shall come into being. Then he gives a whole list. This we can just read it through. It's fantastic. Each name is a legend and a story. So I'm just resisting all the temptation to talk about it because each name is a wonder. Then among all these living beings, cosmic godheads, superhuman and human and subhuman creatures, and amid all these qualities, powers and objects, the chief, the head, the greatest in quality of each class is a special power of the becoming of the Godhead. I am, says the Godhead, Vishnu among the Adityas. Adityas are children of Aditi, the gods. Shiva among the Rudras, so that, you know, people don't start saying, oh, it is a Vaishnava literature. I am Shiv. Brahma is already described. Whichever direction you go, I am there. So, Shiv among the Rudras, Indra among the gods, Prahlad among the titans, Brihaspati, the chief of the high priests of the world, Skand, the war god, so I think worshipped here as Lord Murugan, Kartike, he says, I am the war god, I am among that. Leader of the leaders of battle, see, he is Deva Senapati, leader of the leaders of the battle. And Shubhinda says, he's the representative of the psychic being, spear, that's why he holds a spear. He goes ahead and opens the path. Leader of the leaders. See, what a description. Marichi among the Maruts. Marut's story is also very fascinating. They are the womb of Diti, which Indra destroys, and the child gets broken into 49 pieces. So all of them come out. And Maruts have a very special role. They are kind of gods. They uplift actually. And they are born of a titaness. When you look at these stories, like the distinction was not so strict. Many of the rishis were wedded to titanesses. Even Ruru and Ruru's story, love and death, is about that. So, he, the lord of wealth among the yakshas and rakshasas, he's also among the rakshasas and yakshas, and he's there as Dhanakubir. The serpent Ananta among the nagas. Agni among the Vasu. So Nagas are earthbound force. That's what they mean. So we see that on the head of Ananta, the earth is moving. So it's the earthbound force, at the heart of which there is Vishnu. It's a wonderful image. And on the ocean of knowledge. So that image itself is amazing. Agni among the Vasus. Chitrarath among the Gandharvas. He's the master musician and he teaches dance and music. He went to Arjun. He taught. Kandarpa, the love god. Oh my god. This too? Cupid? Who makes everybody stupid? He says, yes. He's called as Kandarpa. You know why he's called Kandarpa? Because he bites the heart, smites it, and you become love crazy. He says, among the love god, I am Kandarpa. So... Kandarp the love god among the progenitors, Varuna among the peoples of the sea, Ahriman among the fathers, Narad among the divine sages, Yama. See, Yama is described as lord of the law, restrainer. Yama, lord of the law among those who maintain rule and law. That's why those who maintain rule and law are like Yama. I have used this term even in Air Force. I say Yamaraj is ruling. Pray for the Surya Devta to come because Surya has delegated him. His rule is all flat. You do this, you'll be punished. Nothing, no, this thing. Flat rule. Yama rules like that. He is required to restrain. But when sun comes, it doesn't work like that. Sun looks at the inner truth, the inner law, but that is given to sun. So Yama also ultimately is the child of sun. Indian mythology. And see, if you understand it, you understand everything. Sometimes the rule of Yama is necessary. After Yama, then one is ready for the Surya, who is the father of Yama. So he says, I am Yama, lord of the law, among those who maintain rule and law, among the powers of storm, the wind god. So storms, when they come, we should not be worried. We should see the Lord in the storm. At the other end of the scale, I am the radiant sun among lights and splendors, the moon among the stars of night, the ocean among the flowing waters, Meru among the peaks of the world. It's interesting, he uses the word Meru. Meru is actually the highest peak, but that is submerged in the ocean. The highest is not Mount Everest. Mount Everest is on earth. But if you literally go, the highest peak is submerged in the ocean. That's how the Sagar Manthan, that he says, that I am Meru, the highest peak, which has been used for the churning of the ocean. Himalaya among the mountain ranges, Ganga among the rivers. So nice, you know, you feel. That's I keep saying. If you have come to India, not seen Himalaya and the Ganga, you have not understood the spirit of India. So, it's... tourism people have not given me any money for this. The divine thunderbolt among weapons. Why? Because divine thunderbolt of Indra has been made by the bones of Rishi Dadichi, who had accumulated in his bones all the merits of his tapasya. It is not just a weapon. It contains all the energies of the tapasya of the Rishi who was on the verge of a great realization, and he sacrifices his body, which is licked up by light. As the story goes, by a cow, so light. And then he says, okay, take it and make a thunderbolt, which is irresistible. So that's how the origin of the thunderbolt, the power of tapasya. Among all plants and trees, I am the Ashwat. We know that. And here we call it people, but it's the tree which is hanging upside down. Among horses, Indra's horse, Uchai Shravas, flying horse. Airavat, the seven-tusked elephant among the elephants. Among the birds, Garud. Vasuki, the snake god among the serpents. You see, there is a difference between Naga and the serpents. Kamadhuk, the cow of plenty. So cows are adorable, but the cow which is a direct manifestation is Kamadhuk. So on earth it's all symbolically represented. Cow really is a giver of plenty. From every point of view you can see. Among cattle, the alligator among fishes. This was something which it was like to me, because Ganga's Vahan is alligator. So you know that how come alligator? And then you understand, yes, it is a very interesting, it's a very powerful creature of all the fishes that are there. So alligator among fishes, the lion among the beasts of the forest. I am Margashirs, first of the months. I am spring, the fairest of the seasons. In living beings, the Godhead tells Arjun, I am consciousness by which they are aware of themselves and their surroundings. So growth of consciousness is the growth of the Godhead within us. The more we grow in consciousness, the more we unite our consciousness with the divine, the more the divine begins to manifest. I am mind among the senses. This is way beyond modern psychology. It talks of the mind as the master sense. Without the mind, senses mean nothing. Mind is asleep, your eyes are open, nothing is registering. Mind is the sixth sense. Some mind among the senses. Mind by which they receive the impressions of objects and react upon them. See, I am man's qualities of mind and character and body and action. I am glory and speech and memory and intelligence and steadfastness and forgiveness, the energy of the energetic and the strength of the mighty. I am resolution and perseverance and victory. Now you're talking about the qualities through which the divine can be experienced and expressed. I am the sattvic quality of the good. I am the gambling of the cunning. That's also, after all, he is able to win in a game which seems a game of chances. It's not a joke, to, you know. It's quite an intuitive game if you really think about it. I am the mastery and power of all who rule and tame and vanquish, and the policy of all who succeed and conquer, the master of all who work and rule and know, servant of love. That's how Shivindu describes God. I am the silence of things secret, the knowledge of the knower, the logic of those who debate. I am the letter A among letters, the dual among compounds, the sacred syllable Om among words, the Gayatri among meters, the Samved among the Vedas, and the great Sam among the mantras. I am time, the head of all reckoning, to those who reckon and measure. I am spiritual knowledge among the many philosophies, arts and sciences. I am all the powers of the human being and all the energies of the universe and its creatures. Those in whom my powers rise to the utmost heights of human attainment are myself always, my special vibhutis. I am among men the king of men, the leader, the mighty man, the hero. Rama among warriors, Krishna among Vrishnis, Arjun among the Pandavas, Bhrigu among the Rishis. So basically that was the idea in India of worshipping extraordinary characters. You see this in Indian thought. Extraordinary characters were worshipped, literally worshipped. They regarded as God. Because God is somebody whom you still cannot, it takes time to experience. But in these you can experience something of the divine afflatus. So, Shubhendu described this in one of his Bangla writings, that in India, extraordinary characters were worshipped. They were not flattened. Now the age is to reduce greatness as if it is meaningless. And Shubhendu says it's a very dangerous tendency. There is no greatness. Everybody's least common multiple is the same. But highest common factor is different. Man cannot be regarded by the size of his foot, but by the knowledge that he has in his brain. That was the whole idea of hierarchy. And that was the whole idea of many of the ancient system where the Brahmin was regarded and the priest were regarded with reverence. So this flattening everything and this disrespect for greatness. And he says, why shouldn't God use greatness? Even if there is vice in it, he uses everything. Whatever can be used for his purposes. So thus he goes on, and at the end he says, page 365, whatever beautiful and glorious creature thou seest in the world, whatever being is mighty and forceful among men and above man and below him, know to be a very splendor, light and energy of me and born of a potent portion and intense power of my existence. So that's why we have in Mahabharata a character called Ghatotkach. He is a Rakshasa. And Sri Krishna calls him. Why? People think that only to neutralize Karna's weapon. It's a very superficial scene. He is a Rakshasa who has within him all the great and noble qualities which manifest on the battlefield. He knows he is going to die. He says, but I want to sacrifice myself for this cause, which is a cause of dharma. And look at the paradox. On the other side is Karna, who kills him, who keeps saying, I am great, I am great, I am the greatest. And opposite him is pitted this Rakshasa, who dies, but his sacrifice is one of the noblest in history. Knowingly he dies. He doesn't die like Abhimanyu. He knows he's going to die. And yet he says that I know your cause is genuine and divine. O Krishna, therefore I'll be with you. Karna knows that the cause of right is on the other side, yet he chooses to be in this side. So in the story itself, there is a paradox of what really is greatness. So the greatness and glory of God everywhere. With this, we'll stop today.